Hello and welcome to the Alendriofius Frontier Market Coverage Podcast. I am Kent Mensah. Today, we dive into one of the most urgent conversations of our time, artificial intelligence. From fears about job losses to the promise of transforming healthcare, climate resilience, and Africa's innovation future, AI is rewriting the rules of society and the economy. Joining me to unpack these opportunities and challenges is James Manyika, Google Senior Vice President of Research, Technology and Society. Stay tuned. This is a conversation you won't want to miss.
So, first off, AI seems to be the talk of day for everyone. From Google point of view, there are other school of thought which are also saying that AI is here more or less like take away human job. It's going to create a lot of unemployment, especially for people with some certain skills that AI is doing. Google is investing more into AI, other tech giants are also doing the same. What would you say are some of the benefits as far as AI is concerned, and then for people who are expressing fear, what kind of assurance do you want to give them?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's exciting about AI is it's a general purpose technology, and I think we're going to see benefits of it at least in four areas, and I'll come back to the work question. But I think the thing that motivates us and others around AI are the following things. The potential of AI to help individuals to do their everyday tasks, be able to do creative activities, create, write, understand, speak across languages, Google Translate, all of these things. So there's the individual benefits to help people in their everyday lives. Then you've got the other benefit, which is how much it can power the economy, from small businesses to large companies to transforming important sectors like healthcare, like transportation. So the impact on the economy is an incredible motivating factor. Then the third thing is around AI's potential to advance science in ways that benefits all of humanity. So, you know, we just got a Nobel Prize. My colleagues Demis and John got a Nobel Prize for the work in structural biology. That's going to open up drug discovery, therapies, etc. And then finally is the potential for AI to actually help us address some really pressing challenges, whether it's things like flood forecasting, food security, wildfires, dealing with the effects of climate change, in health diagnostics, maternal health. So there's a lot of ways this can. So when you look at all of that, that's actually pretty exciting. And I think we're excited and we hope humanity as a whole gets excited. But I think you're right to express the concern that is often had around jobs and work. And there what we see, and this is not just us, by the way, but much of the economics research that's been done by many, including even the ILO, the International Labour Organization, roughly says the following, that what you'll see on AI and jobs is that on the one end, yes, there will be some occupations that will decline. Estimates for that over the next decade or two typically tend to range in the 1 to 10%-ish range if you look at the variety of research studies. So there'll be some job declines, but there'll also be some job gains, new occupations that will grow, new jobs that didn't exist before, demand for existing jobs. And then the third thing that will happen are the jobs changed. In some ways, this is the bigger effect. In fact, most of the research suggests that 66% or so of the occupations will experience this jobs changed. When people work enabled by and supported by AI, the International Labour Organization, after having looked at something like 140 countries, concluded that the assistive effect is going to be six times the displacement effect. But at the same time, that's still a lot of change, even if the outcome is a good one. A lot of change that's going to require a lot of investments in skills, in training, for people to be able to navigate those changes and those transitions. But the one that I'm particularly excited about, Ken, from a point of view of work, is a lot of the early studies that have been done so far by lots of researchers in universities show that, in fact, the biggest beneficiaries tend to be the people using AI who are less skilled and less expert. That when they work with AI, they're able to perform and be more productive assisted by AI. I think that's a game changer because for many people, the barrier to opportunity has been lack of expertise and lack of experience. So if this enables people without lots of expertise and experience to be able to do things, I think of young people trying to code. I don't know if you code, but you know, one of the things that's interesting is that now you can just express your ideas into these models and then they'll generate the code for you that can actually run. So people who have ideas, who have ideas about this, that, and the other, can now translate their ideas into code without having to wait for somebody to show up and teach them how to code. And I think across Africa in many developing countries, the world has struggled to bring training to everybody who needs it. Mm-hmm. So think about all the people who want coding, and governments and others have not been able to deliver that. But AI has the potential to be a game changer in making it possible for those people to do that. So I think that's exciting.
I was just in a session talking about how AI is being used to help pregnant women, and it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
How is Google able to measure and assess the impact of the tools that you have on local communities and even society in general?
Well, from our point of view, because keep in mind, we're not a healthcare company. Yes. We're not a delivery company. We don't do health. We don't provide healthcare. So for us, we think about, have we built tools that help us address pressing issues? And then how do we make sure those tools are available to everybody to take advantage of them? The maternal tools are one example. We've done the same thing with flood forecasting. So in our case, we built tools to predict floods with 7 days advance notice. And we now cover over 100 countries where more than 700 million people live. Now, we then encourage governments and others to make use of those tools. So for us, we think about, the one thing we can directly affect is, have we solved problems that matter to society? And have we given those tools and made those tools accessible so that people can take advantage of them? Other people are going to, are going to have to do some of the other work too to then make sure the delivery happens. So that's why we then end up working with nonprofits, helping governments, giving them access to these tools to say, please make use of these tools to help address your pressing societal challenges.
Are there plans to establish more centers in Africa, AI centers in Africa?
Well, we continue to think about it, partly because, we want to attract and enable researchers. So even if I think about this Ghana Research Center, we actually don't think of it as a research center for Ghana. Mm. It just happens to be in Ghana. We think of it as a research center with researchers. So if you look at who works here, there are researchers from Nigeria, from Kenya. So for us, we're trying to set up locations. So it's unlikely we're going to have a research center in every country. Mm. We don't do that anywhere else in the world either, by the way. But if we can attract in a few places extraordinarily talented African researchers to work on the most pressing problems, that's important to us. And we think it's exciting partly because having African researchers lead the development of solutions, we think that has to be Africa-led. We think that those solutions have to come from here. And we think those solutions, quite frankly, could also benefit the world. So the open buildings work that we've done, which is now available all over the world, was actually developed by in this office. Mm. I think that's cool. I think that's exciting. I think that's great.
My last question to you, what has been the level of collaboration between Google and then African policymakers and regulators?
I think it can always be better. We've tried to encourage the AU and governments. For example, one area that we think is important is that the more there's a harmonization of policy approaches across Africa, we think that actually benefits Africa, actually, because if you think about it, if you're an entrepreneur in Accra or in Lagos or in Dar es Salaam or wherever you are, and you're starting a company, but you then have to figure out country by country the regulations for how you can release your product, I think that's going to damage and hurt African entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. But imagine if you could develop a product and know that whether I'm in Accra or not, I can serve all of Africa. So these ideas of kind of harmonizing policy frameworks, particularly around the opportunities, are not only good for entrepreneurs and researchers, but also, quite frankly, encourage the flow of capital into Africa, because no one wants to bring capital if you know, oh, I'm only bringing capital only to serve this one country. You want to know that whatever capital you bring is going to be leveraged across all of the continent, or at least a whole region, whether it's West Africa, but ideally across the continent. So we've been trying to encourage African policymakers to do that, which is how do you harmonize across Africa, because that benefits entrepreneurs in the flow of capital and investment.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.